This podcast is brought to you by Learn Prime. Start your journey to becoming a great developer at learn.thoughtbot.com.
Giant robots smashing into other giant robots.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Giant Robots Smashing into Other Giant Robots podcast. It is Wednesday, September 25th. My name is Ben Orenstein, and I'm here today with Paul Farnell. How are you doing, Paul?
Doing great. Thanks, Ben.
So you are the founder of Litmus, which is a company that does email previews and analytics and spam filter testing. So your mission is like get email campaigns looking correct and actually in the inbox.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. Yeah, yeah. My name is Paul Farnell, and along with two others, Matthew Brinley and David Smalley, I'm the founding team of Litmus.
And that was back in 2005 you started?
Yeah, that's right. Yes, yeah. So it's been what seems like an age now.
Yeah,
since we started.
How are things going?
Great. Yeah, I mean we're very fortunate. The past kind of 3 or 4 years in particular, since we opened the office in the US, have been fantastic. Yeah. I mean, we're very lucky. Yeah.
So it's funny. People talk about the sort of like long, slow ramp of death with SaaS, like that sort of long period. And so it sounds like you're saying like basically 5 years in, things started really taking off.
Yes, I would say so. Yeah. I mean, I guess within a year, we could kind of tell that there was kind of traction and this was something worth pursuing. But yeah, I would say it took kind of 4 or 5 years before we were like, oh, wow, like this is a real business now, you know. And we had employees and an office and stuff before then. But I would say, yeah, 4 or 5 years in was when it was like, wow, okay, this is really going somewhere. Like this could be a big deal.
And do you think that was just like it took time for people to find you, or was it the product needed improving?
I think a combination of both. Definitely, I think it was once we expanded beyond just email previews, that really helped. So we've been doing email previews pretty much from the start, and browser testing as well, though the focus is on email. But then we released this analytics product, and I think that's what helped kind of really grow our market a bit more, and kind of build off the success we'd had with previews, have people spending a bit more money because they had to upgrade the plan, some new features and that kind of thing, and began using Litmus a bit more with their clients. And so we had more kind of agency deals and companies like that who are, you know, willing to spend a bit more, add more users to it. And, and that, I think, made a big difference to our, you know, our revenue
base. Yeah. Did it take you a while to realize that that's who your customer base needed to be?
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah. I mean, we definitely, when we started Litmus because we had this need originally for browser testing for ourselves. I was doing freelance web design along with Matt and Dave. And cross-browser testing, something I had to do. I hated the tools that were out there. They're either really expensive or just terribly designed. And so we kind of had a crack at building our own. That's how we got started. And so I guess, honestly, for the first 2-3 years, like we focused almost entirely on selling to people like ourselves, selling to freelancers.
And was this browser testing of sites then, not email?
Yes. Originally, for about the first 6 months, we only did browser testing. And then we knew there was a need for email testing. It's a bit more complicated to develop. But we got a lot of feedback from people saying, you know, browser testing is hard, but email testing is even more difficult. You know, I can have a couple of different machines and install most browsers myself. But, you know, you can't run multiple copies of Notes together. You can't run multiple copies of Outlook together. Like, all this stuff has licensing fees attached, you know. So whilst there was some complexity around, you know, multiple copies of IE or whatever, all browsers were free and all that kind of thing. So there was definitely more cost and complexity involved in people doing their own email testing.
Gotcha.
So we started to build that. And so about a year in, we launched the email testing product.
Okay. Interesting. And now, so I signed up for a trial and did a little demo, and you test in a crazy array of different things.
Yes.
Like old BlackBerry operating systems that don't support HTML email, and like, I was kind of blown away.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Yeah, no, I mean, it's definitely, you know, the breadth of devices and platform stuff that we test on is obviously a big selling point. Yeah, and especially those like older mobile phones or, you know, old versions of Lotus Notes, like where do you even get that from? Like, I don't want to have to run Lotus Notes 6 locally and stuff. So that's, that's been a big part.
So I know you're not on the technical side, but it looks like you're sort of spinning up virtual machines that have the software installed and like viewing the email there and taking a screenshot. Is that the rough gist?
Yep, that's the idea. Yeah, so we do a lot of hosting on our own hardware, which we actually use Mac Minis for. We found that to be a good choice because it has a lot. I mean, as you say, I'm not the technical guy, so I, you know, limited knowledge of this. But Mac Minis have been great for us from a hosting perspective because they have great graphics cards. And what we found was if you take some of the kind of crappy server hardware, that's obviously not optimized for graphics. But we're trying to load people's emails, and it's all about the screenshot, right? And so the screenshots were super slow, or, you know, they would run out of memory and all this kind of stuff, trying to capture these big screenshots of emails. So Mac Minis have been great for us. We also do a lot of hosting on Amazon EC2 as well as kind of overflow when the system gets really busy.
Gotcha. That's pretty cool. Yeah, so it's interesting. The way you hooked me was like very clever, I thought. So it's on the site, and it's like, oh, like click here, enter your email to, and we'll show you like a preview of this thing. And it's like, oh, guess what? You have a free trial account. I mean, more or less. It was pretty easy. But it's interesting. Yeah. I was like, oh, now I'm in the product.
Yes.
It was it was really an easy gateway in there.
Yeah. No, I'm glad that worked well for you. Yeah, we started doing that maybe 6 months ago. And that's been really, definitely been really successful from a marketing point of view. Mm-hmm. We give you a sample email, so you can't just hit one button and you drop straight into the product.
Right.
And that begins your trial, basically.
Yeah.
So it's, people seem to really like that. We had a little bit of abuse of that, you know, people using that instead of obviously signing up with a credit card or whatever, but fairly minimal. It's great just to start that conversation with somebody. Like, you have their email, after they run that test.
Right.
And so we can then reach out and, you know, upgrade you to a full trial and put your card details in. It's that kind of gradual engagement process there.
Yeah.
Has worked really well.
And you're super happy with that.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Yeah. No, that's been very good.
Cool.
Yeah.
So what do you focus on on your day to day?
Yeah, that's a good question. I guess that's something that's, that has been changing quite a bit over the years. I used to do all of our UI design up until 9 months ago, something like that, a year ago. Everything design-wise on Litmus basically was me. And then, we ended up hiring a couple of designers who are actually way better than me. And so all the good stuff that you see recently is them, not me.
Your marketing site is beautiful.
Thanks. Yes.
Really nice.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm really pleased with how that came out. We have a redesign of the app itself, which is in the kind of final stages now, which is looking awesome. Like, again, none of my work there. But really, really great to have people on the team that are just totally focused on that. With that off my plate, I mean, nowadays, I suppose my job is mainly, I guess, business development would sum it up best. You know, it's perhaps, exploratory calls with this person or that person or this company or meeting with this guy and, things that may turn into something huge or they may turn into nothing. And that's, a lot of what I'm doing. I know that's a kind of vague answer, but, it's exploratory meetings about partnerships or licensing. And
have those been substantial sources of revenue for you already?
Yes. Yeah, definitely. That's a side of the business that we're definitely trying to grow. We have, a couple of different types of partnerships. We partner with email service providers, so companies like MailChimp and Campaign Monitor and folks like that, who use our API to integrate the Litmus previews into their own product. So if you use MailChimp, you can use like a cut-down version of Litmus right inside it. You don't need a Litmus account. Mm-hmm. But it's nice because it's branded as Litmus. And so, you get to kind of try it within MailChimp.
Yeah.
And then if you want more, you want a fully-fledged product, you can obviously come to us direct.
Pretty substantial for you guys to get that.
I mean, that was awesome. Yeah. I mean, they've been great to work with. And we get a lot of business kind of referred that way, from people trying it out there. Mm. So that's been good. So we actually, the Campaign Monitor, MailChimp are a couple of the bigger ones. Silverpop is another that's been big for us. But we have about 125 of those email service provider integrations, which are live at the moment, which is a big deal, and does drive a fair bit of revenue directly. and also is helpful, as I mentioned, from a marketing perspective, because that's where people are finding out about us. That's been great. The other side, I guess, that we have is sort of partnerships with agencies or email companies that are doing a lot of service business. This would be people who are kind of provisioning Litmus accounts for their clients. Mm-hmm. And so they have sub-accounts within like a bigger Litmus account. And that's a fairly recent thing that we introduced, but that's made a huge difference too. And we got some really great names using us kind of through these big agencies and stuff. So that's been exciting as well.
Yeah.
But obviously that comes with a bit more work on the biz dev side to make those happen.
Hmm. It's interesting as a developer, I feel like email marketing in general has a little bit of a bad name. We're sort of like very sensitive about our email inboxes, I think.
Yep.
And it's easy in this world to sort of forget that email is actually a huge business. Like, you guys are like, it's a fairly niche thing in a way, what you do, and yet is part of things, something that makes a lot of companies a ton of money. And so it's actually something that's, you know, a very viable business.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, I think people are sometimes surprised that we have this, you know, with 23 people, revenue's fairly significant and so on. And, to build that pretty much off the back of just previewing emails.
Mm-hmm.
Seems very niche and maybe is unexpected. But yeah, I mean, as a channel, for most companies, like, this is going to be their best performing channel. So, I mean, if your email doesn't look right, then, you know, those segment of people who are using Gmail or whatever, you know, it's 20% of your list, they can't respond to the offer or, you know, or
right.
It reflects badly on the brand because the email looks like crap, you know?
Yeah. It made me realize how effective this channel must be. I was at a sporting goods store of some kind, and they offered me, it was basically the equivalent of like $20 for my email address. It was like 50% off this purchase, or like some percentage off a purchase up to like $20 for an email address.
Yeah.
And so it's like, well, clearly you're getting more than that back on average.
Yeah. Yeah. I've had similar experiences. Yeah. And it is kind of crazy. Yeah. People in retail willing to do discounts, $10, $20, something like that for you to join the list. But yeah, I mean, as you say, that's a great example of how valuable it is to them, you know, over a period of years.
Right.
To have you on file.
Yeah. Lifetime value is pretty substantial just from one email address.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Yeah.
It makes sense too. Cause like, I mean, it's like the first thing I do, I'm in bed still and I have my phone open. It's like, oh, there's my email from those people saying, you know, we got smart wool socks, you know, three
right.
for one kind of thing.
Yep. Yeah.
So I believe it. So you actually started off creating companies when you were young. This is like a lifetime passion for you.
Yeah. I guess it is. Yeah. I mean, this is obviously by far the biggest thing that I've done. But yeah, there've been a few others.
You didn't want to just go get like a boring normal job or something?
No, I tried that. I used to sell suits. Was my first like proper job. I did that for a year or so. And like hiring suits for weddings and stuff like that, which was all right. I mean, it was interesting from a sales point of view, and we were a lot of that was on commission. So that was kind of a good experience, I guess, to sell people suits and ties and all that stuff. But I started doing some software stuff when I was about 12, 13, 14 kind of time, and sold a little product online, this like shareware product called Instant Theme Creator. Mm-hmm. Was the first thing that kind of sold online. And that did fine. I mean, when you're 14 or whatever, it doesn't take a lot of revenue to, you know, feel fairly significant, getting $200 a month or something. Even that starting out was great, you know, and was more than, you know, my friends had to spend on clothes or whatever we wanted to buy. So that was kind of fun. And I mean, I ran that for a long time. Like, I grew a bit more, released a few other products, software products that way. It was good. For a short time, I sold, used to import these, they were like iPod headphone, like cable wraps. Mm-hmm. It was called Smart Wrap. I think it's still around. In fact, I saw it a couple of years ago. They were selling them in the Apple store, which I thought was great. Obviously nothing to do with me. But there was a company in, gosh, I can't even remember where they were, where they were actually manufactured. But it was really hard. I wanted to buy some, and it was really hard to get them shipped to the UK. And so I set up a deal with the guy. I mean, it was only a couple of people running the company to be like the exclusive distributor of these Smart Wrap. These cable wrap things. Mm-hmm. In the UK. Obviously, that's where I was living at the time. And that was pretty successful, you know, like doing some decent like SEO and AdWords and all that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Actually got a fair few sales. And every day I was like shipping out dozens of these, these little cable wrap things. Mm. So that was kind of fun, different to do a physical good.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Okay. So this is a serial thing for you.
I guess so. Yeah, I mean, all the other things were very, very small. I mean, this is by far, as I say, the biggest thing I've done. But it's definitely a passion.
Yeah. So you said you were in the UK before.
Mm-hmm.
What brought you guys to Boston? Because you're actually in Cambridge right now, right?
Yes. Yeah, that's right. It's a great question. So we started the company in 2005. It was 2009 that I moved over here. So we've been running for about 4 years, and most of our customers were based in the US. And also, as I mentioned, those partnerships with people at MailChimp and so on. Mm-hmm. Most of the companies that we wanted to partner with were also based in the US. Mm-hmm. And it was tricky for us as a small company based overseas. You know, our contracts for the partnerships were all UK law and all this kind of thing. It was hard to compete with other companies in the US who were doing similar things and trying to get similar deals. Mm-hmm. You know, I think people definitely didn't take us as seriously because we were small and foreign and whatever.
You had those funny accents.
Exactly, yeah. So I moved here first of all, and I was based, I don't know if you know, the Cambridge Innovation Center, mm-hmm. yeah, in Kendall. So that was great. I mean, it was just me and a desk, and it was, you know, essentially a sales office with just me here. And that helped, definitely that helped, you know, be able to travel, visit clients and potential partners and stuff more easily. We were then hiring for developers. And we had a couple of ads up, or a couple of positions open, rather, in the UK. And we thought, well, why not advertise them in the US as well, right? And just say the job's open in Cambridge. And we ended up getting way better applicants in Cambridge than we did back in Leeds in Britain. And so in the end, I mean, we interviewed people in both places. I flew back, and then we flew our CTO, Matt, over here. Interviewed people both places. We're like, wow, people here are, like, just, I mean, just a, you know, a cut above the kinds of people that we're able to attract in Britain. And so we thought, all right, well, you know, let's beef up the presence here and hire them in Cambridge. And so we moved Matt over as well, to say, the CTO, and hired a couple of developers and a support person. And fairly quickly, although it wasn't planned this way in advance, the US office kind of became the main presence for the company. So we just had more people here. Mm-hmm. And so then when we had other open jobs, we tended to advertise here first. We found more great people, and we have an awesome team here now. And so now the majority of the team are based here, and we, you know, moved into our own space. And now it's definitely the kind of HQ for Litmus is mm-hmm. over here. Yeah.
It's interesting. It seems like in the past, people would move somewhere because the companies were there. So it's like you move from the country to the city because that's where the jobs were. And it seems, at least in tech, to have sort of shifted to where companies are now going to where the developers are. Hmm. Because, like, for instance, I don't think, like, Austin is becoming this tech hotbed, or like Boulder, things like that. And I don't think it's because companies decided this is an amazing place to do business. It's more like, actually, we can hire a lot of developers here because developers want to live there.
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right, actually. Yeah, that's an interesting point. Yeah, I mean, that was definitely the case for us. Yeah, and I think you're seeing that elsewhere too.
Yeah, it's good. Because I've had this theory for a little while, and it's interesting to hear that that's exactly what happened with you guys.
Absolutely, yes.
It's awesome as a developer, you know, because I think I can go kind of live where I want to, and it's like, well, if there's enough of us here, then companies will start showing up, and
it
turns into, then it sort of reinforces.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, we've definitely hired remote people as well. And that's worked out really well for us too. Mm. So we have a number of people that are based. We've got a guy in Canada, someone in Italy, both Ruby on Rails developers. Mm. One of our designers is out in Phoenix. Like, I mean, we've got people kind of spread all over, and that's worked really well too. So, I mean, I'm definitely a proponent of remote working as well as, although the office is great and I enjoy having people there face to face. And we do try and fly out. Everyone who's remote will come out, I don't know, every 3 or 4 months, at least, you know, and stay for a few days at a time and just to have that face-to-face interaction. But definitely remote working's worked out really well for us too, you know, which I guess just to, you know, I bring that up because I think you actually could genuinely live anywhere you like. And, you know, as long as the time zone is reasonable, then that it works out great.
Yeah, and that seems like another thing that's shifting is the sort of perception and around that in particular.
Yes,
it's becoming more and more of an option.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, honestly, we have definitely struggled to find enough Rails developers and .NET developers. So our back end is all kind of .NET. So we're doing a lot of automation of Windows stuff and that kind of thing. So it makes sense. But yeah, all the front end side is Ruby on Rails. And definitely struggled to find enough people locally. Mm-hmm. So we generally, when we list a job, we just say it's anywhere. And, you know, be great if they were local, but if they're not, that's fine too.
Yeah. You know? It's amazing what sufficient demand will do.
Mm, yes.
It's like the industry is very much being shaped by the fact that the demand is so high. And so all these new things are happening, or new-ish things, like, you know, acceptance of remote work and, like, these developer training things, like what we do, or other boot camps, things like that. There's just the demand at the top for experienced developers is like so strong that like there's a bunch of things that are shifting around.
Yes.
That are new.
Yeah. No, I think that's absolutely right. Yeah. And I guess that's, yeah, I mean, for us, we've always, thus far, always hired experienced developers. We haven't yet taken on any kind of junior positions. But that's definitely something we would like to explore. And it feels like there are many more people like in that, you know, maybe they got a year or two's experience or maybe even less, but or they're coming from a different language or something like that. And, yeah, we haven't really felt like we've had the bandwidth to kind of take people like that on in order to give them the kind of mentorship and training that they would need to be really successful.
Yep.
But I would love to see us do that, you know, in the next year or two.
Yeah. And as another thing that's happened as a result of this demand is, so we have the same problem, which is it's hard to find really experienced people. And so we created our apprentice program that was basically created out of that need. It's like, okay, well, let's figure out a way to take these people that have less experience, but we think are promising. And that's become, I think, our best source of people now. I think we've had more full-time hires out of that program than anything else.
Yeah.
It's interesting to see the industry shift and companies shift and like, okay, what do we have to do now that, you know, it's so hard to get people?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And am I right in saying that you've also opened up that apprenticeship program to other companies in the area, right? So you may hire people from that, but also
Absolutely, you know, there's no obligation.
Okay.
It's a 3-month program, and you know, if we hire actually a good number of those people, but some of them don't end up wanting to work here, or they you know, have this dream of going somewhere else.
Sure.
And so there's no commitment.
Yeah, no, that's really cool.
Yeah,
no, that's great to see.
So has your growth in Litmus been a fairly steady process, or is it kind of more of a step function where like suddenly you figure something out and like bam, there's like a big difference all of a sudden?
Generally, it's been a kind of a steady growth, accelerating over time, but not like in a hockey stick like fashion, right? Just reliable kind of steady growth, which I think is really good and very healthy. I will say there have been a couple of things that we've done, especially earlier on, that actually did, wow, we changed this and suddenly, you know, we've had like 100% increase in a month or something.
Mm-hmm.
And one of those was the currency that we charged in. So this is probably not something that would really affect many people listening to this, but we thought we were being really clever when we, like earlier on, in charging customers in euros, because we thought, well, we're a British company, but you know, the pound is not used as widely as the euro, so let's, you know, use the euro, because I don't know why. It just now it seems crazy to even say it, but so we priced everything in euros. And of course, if you're in the US or anywhere that doesn't use the euro, you're unlikely to know the exchange rate like off the top of your head. It's hard to judge.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't even know it right now, you know, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So I think a lot of people came to the site and felt, especially people in the US, felt like, well, this just isn't for me. Like,
right.
This is a thing for Europe or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, and we're put off. And so that was a big mistake. But we didn't really realize that until, I mean, we've been doing it for maybe, I forget really, maybe 6 months, 9 months or so. And we started to get just very occasionally little bits of feedback from customers who said, yeah, you know, I looked at it, but it just felt like it, as I say, it wasn't for me because of the currency. And so we just switched it to dollars, and within a month, I mean, literally like 100% growth in new signups. I mean, it was crazy. It was such a big difference. So, I mean, I would never charge for things online, you know, at least begin with in anything, but
yeah.
Dollars these days.
It's funny that such a small thing would do that.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
it's like a like you said, it's an indicator, it's a marker.
Mm.
It's just like a sign, like you don't know the secret handshake.
Yeah.
This is not, you know, I'm not in this club.
Yes, yeah. No, absolutely. Yeah, so that made a big difference. But I would say overall, definitely kind of steady, accelerating growth, but not, nothing kind of crazy. But I think that's good. I mean, maybe it sounds silly to say that, you know, that's good rather than, you know, growing like crazy. But I think because it's been kind of steady and over time, it's given us, we haven't felt rushed into hiring like a ton of people all at once and that kind of messing up the culture or, you know, like yeah. We're hiring one, two people at a time, like every few months or so, maybe every 6 months throughout the life of the company, pretty much. And we've been hiring a little bit more recently, but I think that's important that people get a chance to, you know, join the team and fit in and like settle in and everything, and it doesn't feel like everything's sort of changing around you the whole time. You know, and I think that's a function of that kind of steady growth and the way that we've managed that, but also that we're self-funded, and so we're not having, you know, another round of funding or not seeking that next round or reliant on that kind of VC-funded kind of model.
Yeah, and plus you've earned every bit of it, so it's not like any of it was sort of a trend or like a short-term spike or something. It's kind of just like these are all legitimate customers that, you know, we've built this business slowly, and they're likely, no one's likely to just disappear en masse.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it feels much more stable, kind of predictable. Yeah, and like a proper business would grow, you know, or you know, a more old-fashioned business.
It's funny, it seems like everybody that has built these large, substantial SaaS companies says roughly that. It's like, it wasn't just like, we didn't just blow up all of a sudden. It was like, yeah, you know, you keep slogging at it and you keep improving it every day and every week, and it's a little bit better. And, you know, 5 years later, you look back like, oh, yeah, we got a lot of customers now.
Yeah.
It just takes time.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I think, you need to persevere. But yeah, I mean, as long as it's generally going, you know, the right direction, which it always has been for us. I mean, you know, every month is better than the one before, but we're very fortunate in that way. So yeah, no, I mean, it's been great. It's great fun.
If I gave you one sheet of paper, and you had to sort of replace yourself, and your successor was going to be coming on, and their training is just that one page, and they're taking your job. Or say, let's even rewind a little bit, maybe, because you're sort of at a different stage now. But let's say a few years ago, when you're trying desperately to grow this thing, what would you put on there?
Wow, that's a great question, but not an easy one. I mean, I think one of the things that's been most important is our focus on the product. I mean, that's the base of everything, really. The focus on the product and our focus on design, I think, you know, in particular, are the two main things that have driven our success. And when I say focus on the product, I mean keeping that simplicity and kind of elegance that we became known for. And I think that certainly a few years ago, and still today to some extent, my role was to kind of constantly ensure that the product was elegant and straightforward, and we weren't putting in a ton of superfluous stuff in there, that it was answering that core need of the email designer, and kind of keeping that on track. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And it's interesting because I'm sure that the product improved quite a bit over time, but you stayed focused on the core things that you wanted to do.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think there were all sorts of different things that we could have done, and I'm really glad that we didn't spread ourselves too thin and get, you know, pulled in all these different directions, and instead, you know, stayed focused on that product. And genuinely, you know, I think have built the best email preview tool that there is. I mean, I think we're the market leader in that. And I think the reason is because we've stayed very focused on it and have said no to just an absolute ton of stuff in the meantime. Yeah. So that would be, yeah, off the top of my head, that would be, you know, my top piece of advice.
Yeah. Too. Do you have any like daily or weekly habits that you do that you think has helped ensure that that works?
I mean, constantly using the product myself, I think, is important. You know.
But are you an email marketer?
Well, I suppose if we're talking a few years ago, I did all the email marketing for Litmus itself, and I'd done it for clients, of course, before that, when I was doing web design. So yeah, I mean, I was coding the email templates for all our transactional email, our newsletters, like putting it together, writing all the copy, and of course testing it, making sure it worked across different platforms. So yeah, I mean, I don't do that myself for our production templates these days, mm-hmm. Which is why they look so much better than they used to.
Yeah.
But yeah, but I'm still in the product testing stuff myself, you know, using it, you know, multiple times a week, which I think is really important to be doing. Yeah.
So like I run our Learn product, which is for teaching developers. And as you're saying this, I'm constantly in the product and looking at it and aware of it, but I'm not working on my learning as well. You know, I'm not like learning through it. And I actually had an interesting conversation last week with another Thoughtbotter, and he was saying, he's like, I don't use Learn. And that's like, shouldn't I? Like, shouldn't we make it so that I also want to use it? And like, and so there's something in there for me. And I was like, that's such a good point.
Yeah.
And I think that would only help to be in there more and like be a student.
Yes.
And yeah. So I asked about habits because I'm trying to like figure out what kind of things I should be doing regularly. And one of the things I feel like maybe not as often, but on a semi-regular basis is like sign up from scratch. You know, like go to the site, read the description, sign in, you know, take a class, like see what's, take a workshop, see what's going on, and try to use it as someone else, as like a straight up user would.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Actually, I do try and do that frequently. I did that fairly recently and realized that actually our, so we send a number of emails when you first sign up, as part of that kind of onboarding. And we give you like links to resources that we think will be useful or whatever content that we put together. And yeah, the content is still good, but it was way out of date. And so we've been working on redoing those kind of welcome series. And that was out of, you know, spotting that those were out of date because you're signing up as a fresh customer and there's no other way to get that series unless you do
right.
a fresh sign up.
And you haven't seen them in a while because you wrote them, you know, a while back.
So that, no, I think that's very important. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's easy to forget that there are like a million little details that you've decided on and that decision could be now outdated.
Yes.
It's like, yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. We do send that. We send two emails all right at once and like they're kind of redundant or, you know, whatever.
Yeah. And I think unless you do that, and I mean, sign up properly with a credit card and stuff. And then I got our receipts as well because it was billing me. Right. And obviously you can go and cancel and refund. But that's another thing that you wouldn't see unless you do an actual genuine sign up. Right. Mm-hmm. Even just testing the sign up process with dummy data is not the same
right.
as putting in your actual credit card and getting that on the bill. And like, what does the credit card statement say? Does it say Litmus? Does it say Salted Services? You know, because that's the official title. Like that kind of stuff matters, but you don't get that unless you run through it completely as an actual customer would.
Yeah.
You know, and no one's ever going to report that to you. You know, I was, you know, it said Salted Services and not Litmus or whatever, you know, which is something that happened with us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which you only spot if you're doing it yourself.
Right. Yeah. That's interesting. There are a bunch of things that are below the threshold of like people will actually complain about it.
Yeah.
But matter like you contribute to toward their impression of you.
Yes. Yeah.
With the Euros thing, you said that like the feedback was only from a couple people and it seemed small, right? And like it ended up being a thing that was massively important, but like people weren't like banging on your email inbox being like, this is stupid, this is wrong, change this. It's just kind of like, oh, it seemed a little weird, like it wasn't for me.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I literally think we heard that from two people. And it was feedback that was kind of vague. You know, oh, yeah, it just seemed a little bit odd that you were charging Euros. Whereas actually, there were hundreds of people a month that were making this decision not to purchase, you know,
yeah,
based upon that.
Yeah, and those are the ones that are, that's the tricky part, right? It's like there are a lot of people that are abandoning buying from you without ever telling you why.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I suppose the frustrating thing is there must be tons more like that now.
Sure.
And it's figuring out, you know, what's the thing we need to change.
Right, yeah. And your conversion rate's never going to be 100%. So there are always going to be people that like look at it and like, nope.
Yes.
But yeah. Maybe could have been good customers.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah.
So if you had to step away from the company, say you sold it or something like that, what would you want to go do?
That's a good question. It's not really something I think about. I'd love to go to art school. That would probably be what I would do. Yeah. I did a business degree, which was fun. It was good. I learned stuff. Obviously, but yeah, I mean, I've always been really interested in design. Mm. So yeah, I'd love to go do graphic design or something like that. I think that'd be a fun pursuit for, you know, 2 or 3 years.
Yeah. Any hobbies that you're pursuing now outside the company?
Yeah.
Or
I
is
mean,
there time
I guess,
for that?
I mean, I guess not a great deal. I mean, I run a fair bit. That's something I started doing a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
What else? I mean, travel a fair bit. I guess that's a fairly obvious thing to say. But, you know, sometimes for work, but often not. It's been fun, I guess. I've been fortunate enough that by the time I moved to the U.S., like we were making a bit of money. And it's fairly affordable to travel around, you know, either locally in New England or taking flights and stuff. And as I say, some for work, some not. And so have actually seen a lot of America actually in the last few years, which has been really fun. Like a couple of really great road trips and, you know, traveled quite a bit on the West Coast and stuff. So that's, that's definitely been a highlight. Yeah.
Well, sounds good. Well, Paul, I appreciate you coming by and talking about everything.
Of course. Yeah, no, great to be here.
Yeah, it's lovely chatting.
Cool. Thank you.
Yeah. So if people wanted to get in touch with you, what's a good way to do that?
So they could email me. It's paul@litmus.com or find me on Twitter. I'm unsalted.
If you'd like to access the show notes for this episode, you can go to thoughtbot.com/giantrobots/68. Today's podcast was recorded and edited by Mike Manner and produced by Chad Pytel. Thanks for listening.